I remember how you said that language is a knife that spreads what we feel across the dry crust of someone's heart.
Oh dear. Okay, so let me stumble over to some words from September 6, 2011, Mouse Report.
This is kind of interesting here.
Yes, we go now to the gentleman who's just walked in. Can you tell us your name and where you were when the explosion took place?
My name is Ezell Harris. I was just off the bridge by Church Street when the second tower went down.
And what did you see?
It came down like a house of cards. There was, appeared to me to be a series of explosions.
So that was Flashpoints on September 11th, 2001. And this is, here go, 100 Smoking Guns of 9/11 from Dave. Oops. Well, how about switch to this?
You come from far away with pictures in your eyes. Coffee shops and morning streets in the blue and silent sunrise. But night is the cathedral where we recognize the sign. We strangers know each other now as part of the whole design. Oh, hold me like a baby that will not fall asleep. Curl me up inside you, let me hear you through the heat. Oh,
oh well, maybe you won't get it if I don't jump in and mangle Suzanne Vega's Gypsy and Kate Wolf's Poet's Heart, because in the first part she says, knife, or language is the knife we use to spread feelings on the dry crust of one another's heart. And happens the Gypsy Mountains needing tree fodder. But once upon a time, I ran away to the... No, I didn't run away. I was visiting my uncle. I was taking the EMT class, and it said PAHS. I was living in my bus, so it didn't matter that that meant Point Arita High School, so I went off and lived in... Oh, you can park on Point Arita Lighthouse Road, just so out in the middle of nowhere, the pigs don't bust you for sleeping in your car. Which would put a little dent in the RV tourist industry, of course, so... Anyway, looking for work, I had to go up to Fort Bragg, where the Amnesty International group was the Coast Peddler office in Fort Bragg, or was that Mendocino? Anyway, I was up around Fort Bragg looking for work, and I ended up around Mendocino, where, of course, you can't park in your bus, because it's too yuppified, but... Where were we? Oh, Suzanne Vega, yeah, who wrote the song that Kate Wolf copied. I think it's this one.
At this time when the earth is waking to the dawn of another age, I tell you now, there is no reason to be afraid.
Well, that's what I had queued up, but actually, the line about the letter, was it to Suzanne Vega, I think, from a friend that I met in that other little story, was the first Kate Wolf song I had queued up here. Oops, did I play that whole thing already? Well, we'll play it again. Oh, well.
I wrote to you somewhere in South Australia, a poet's heart in the eye of a hurricane. I struggle with finding words to sing these days, I said, as if my thoughts are waiting in the wings for the stage to clear. You in your elegance and humor filled the room, your love and your concern, your anger at the injustice of man's narrowness and fear. I thank you for being here. A poet's heart crying a fighter's tear. The children of your body spread out across this earth like messages written across time, measuring the years. And you in your elegance and humor fill the room, love and your concern, your anger at the injustice of man's narrowness and fear. I thank you for being here. I heard your songs reach out to California, a poet's heart locked. Of the old men and the booze, singing out the truth in lies of forgiveness and loyalties to friends, constant as the endless railroad ties. And you in your elegance and humor fill the room, your love and your concern, your anger at the injustice of man's narrowness and fear. I thank you for being here. Far apart. I remember how you said that language is a knife that spreads what we feel across the dry crust of someone's heart. And you in your elegance and humor fill the room, your love and your concern, your anger at the injustice of man's narrowness and fear. I thank you for being here. Gentle warrior, with your heart like gold and a rainbow in your brave companion. Do you see a world shining in the sky? With your body dancing like an arrow, spreading joy beneath your feet and your hands that wave like tall grass in the wind. As you speak with the shyness of a small child and the wisdom of a sage, I tell you now, there is no reason to be afraid.
So let me jump. If there's no reason to be afraid, I can talk about... Okay, fake news on Russia and other official enemies. This isn't the last thing Ed Herman did, but he died on Saturday. Did you know that the coverage by Time, Newsweek, CBS News, and the New York Times, the 84 murder of the priest Jerzy Popielewski in communist Poland, a dramatic and politically useful event for the politicized Western mainstream media, exceeded all their coverage of the murders of 100 religious figures killed in Latin America by U.S. client states in the post-Second World War years taken together? Well, if he wasn't in his 90s, I would say there would be the reason to look into that. Death of Ed Herman on Saturday, but there is no reason to be afraid.
Brother warrior, there are none of us who walk this path alone. Spirit healer, it's the only life that we have ever known. I see your smile in the sunlight. I hear your song in the rain. And I hold you here inside me. Feel your love, know your pain. At this time when the earth is waking to the dawn of another age, I tell you now, there is no reason to be afraid.
Pretty and the mischievous, by the timid and the blessed, by the blowing skirts of ladies who promise to gather you to their breast. Oh, will not fall asleep. Curl me up inside you, let me hear you through the heat. Oh, you have hands of rain and water, and that earring in your ear. The wisdom on your face denies the number of your years. With the fingers of the potter and the laughing tale of the fool, the arranger of disorder, with your strange and simple rules. Yeah, now I've met me another spinner of strange and gauzy threads, with a long and slender body and a bump upon the head. Oh, hold me like a baby that will not fall asleep. Curl me up inside you, let me hear you through the heat. With a long and slender body and the sweetest, softest hands, and we'll blow away forever soon and go on to different lands. Please do not ever look for me, but with me you will stay. And you will hear yourself in song blowing by one day. But now hold me like a baby that will not fall asleep. Curl me up inside you, let me hear you through the heat.
Let's go to Bill Binney, because you wouldn't know that Bill Binney existed, except they ask all the, like, MSM if he had been paid for this, but they don't say a peep about what he's saying here. So,
good evening, friends. We start tonight with a major new report.
The intel community, quote unquote, is not being honest with President about Russia. This is former intelligence officers say they have proof the alleged hack of the Democratic National Committee was an inside job, because the amount of bandwidth that it takes is exceeds what they have. I mean, the, you know, just like, it's so big of a volume thingy now. Oh, it's because I don't have the, never mind, I got the mic on and the monitor down, so let me start over again. Sorry if that was confusing.
Good evening, friends. We start tonight with a major new report that the president ordered CIA Director Mike Pompeo to meet with a former NSA whistleblower. At the meeting, the two discussed new research showing the DNC computer hacks were actually leaked by someone locally. Russia's alleged hacking of the DNC servers is accepted as gospel by the mainstream media and the political establishment in this country. But one former NSA whistleblower with a team of former intelligence officers at his back is challenging the notion the Russians were involved in any way whatsoever. Bill Binney is known as the whistleblower who revealed millions of dollars of waste in the NSA in 2001. Now his name is returning to the headlines. Reports confirm the CIA director, Mike Pompeo, met with Binney on October 24th at the request of President Trump. The president and the CIA director believe there may be substance to Binney and his team's conclusions the Russians were not involved in the DNC hacks. Instead, they claim it was an inside job. Someone with physical access to the DNC servers leaked the files. After the meeting, Pompeo told Binney to expect a call from his offices. The NSA and the FBI now want to talk to Benny about his research. And joining us now is former NSA whistleblower and intelligence officer Bill Benny. Mr. Benny, thanks for being here tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You were being vilified in the mainstream media. CNN this morning called you a conspiracy theorist. What's your response to that?
Well, I think that that's basically showing the shallow weakness of their argument. They produce no facts whatsoever and simply throw labels at people to kind of characterize and do character assassination. I mean, they have no facts to back up anything they're saying, and that's what I was basically telling Director Pompeo.
How did he approach you? How did this come about, the meeting with Pompeo?
He opened up by saying that the president said that he should talk to me if he wanted to get facts about Russiagate. And so that's the way it started, and so I told him everything I knew, factually, basically said that what we had developed in terms of the rates of transfer and all of that, our testing, even international testing of transferring data, clearly showed that it was a local download and not an international hack.
How did he receive that information?
I think he took it very well. I mean, I never attributed it to anybody because we don't know who did the download or whether or not it went anywhere else. I maintain that NSA would know that, though. If anybody did anything across the net, NSA has so many taps on the fiber network inside the U.S. and around the world, and so many trace route programs embedded by the hundreds around the network, they would know where these packets went.
You're not the only one that believes this. And the letter that was signed and sent to the president was also done by many credible people as well. Interesting how that's being left out of the story. What do you make of that?
Well, it's a way of slanting the whole issue. You ignore facts that don't conveniently fit.
Oh, yeah, I had a little anecdote. So I Googled British Broadcasting Corporation foreign agent registration, and guess what? I got 5 pages of Russia, Russia, Russia. Oh, well, I guess that's not funny, huh? Well, anyway, this last week, I remembered that Nasrallah is talking about the situation with the Kagaboka, como se dice? Our Taliban rulers have set themselves up to lose, but they use all of these self-evident terms like what does Al-Qaeda mean in Arabic? It means shitter. And that's why I called Big Brother Kagaboka, because this morning they're waging this war on the post 9/11 hit list countries. So let's just run back. Now tell us again why you think an Afghan did this.
I was just off the bridge by Church Street when the second tower went down.
And what did you see?
It came down like a house of cards. There was, appeared to me to be a series of explosions, both on the top level of the building and on the ground.
So we've had 16 years of war on the pretext that an Afghan did that series of explosions. Now, let me see. Okay, back to Bill Binney.
That's what the media's been doing. I mean, they must think we're Pavlov's dogs. We're all going to be, through repetition, conditioned to believe everything they say.
When Mr. Pompeo came to you, give us a sense of his demeanor. Was it a sense of urgency? Did he feel like he was on a fact-finding mission? Was he serious? Was he just doing what the president told him to do?
I would think that it was a fact-finding mission kind of a thing. He wanted to find out what the facts were. This is really bad. This means the intelligence agencies, even his own, are not telling him what the facts are. This is not a good for our country.
Is it outside the operating standard procedure to have the president tell the CIA director to go to a source and not have some other officer? What does that say? I spoke to a congressman on the Hill today who said that might be the only person the president can trust.
Well, That may be true, but this is what concerns me, is that the intelligence community is not being honest with the president, the administration, even the director of Central Intelligence. That's what the implication is. Now, to me, that bodes very bad. I mean, that's like you can get into slam dunk situations like the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and we could go kill a couple hundred thousand people. Mm-hmm. For what? For a false statement, for a false issue.
So you believe that the DNC was not hacked by Russia, that it was an inside job, that someone inside the DNC did this to the Democratic Party. You believe that?
Well, no, that's our evidence is it came down locally.
Okay.
So that's the evidence. I mean, it's not a question of saying who did it locally. We don't know. But there are people who are saying certain things that the FBI knows who did it already, and they're not telling the president. And that NSA and FBI together know a lot more than they're telling the president.
Now, CNN is really riding this, and they're working you over. As I said, they called you a conspiracy theorist. One of their correspondents even referenced your appearances on this network, RT America, and also the fact that they put a graphic up saying you're 74 years old, implying that you're over the hill or you don't know what you're talking about or don't have all your faculties. I mean, as a viewer, that's how I took it. I just want the story.
Yeah.
I think America wants the story.
That's all we're after, the facts.
Okay. Where is this going to go?
Well, I think it's going to go. I think the entire intelligence community needs to be revamped. They need a real shakeup there because obviously they're not being pro-administration. They don't want the country to really get the truth.
Mm-hmm.
They're hiding this from keep the population ignorant, uninformed, so they can manipulate them any way they want. This is the same thing the mainstream media is doing.
And the people that signed on to this letter, do they believe the same thing you believe?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and there's some real credible people there.
They were people who only technically, these are technical people in the VIPs, the Veterans Intelligence Professionals.
Mm-hmm.
It's the technical set of people.
All right. Where is this going to go with you? I mean, do you feel intimidated at all that the mainstream media is depicting you as the way they are?
No, it just shows the weakness of their argument. That's all. I mean, they're weak. If they had anything, they should present it. What fact do you have to support the assertions you're making?
Mr. Benny, I appreciate your
all
time.
Right. You're
Thank
welcome.
You.
Thank you.
Ask yourself the critical question tonight. Does this make sense? There are currently 5 high-profile investigations underway into alleged Russian collusion and hacking. Let's see, there's the Mueller investigation, both House and Senate Intel Committees, the House and Senate Judiciary Committees. It should be noted that Bill Binney, the man that you were just watching, has not been asked to testify to any of these investigations.
So, Nasrallah, the Lebanese Hezbollah leader, showed us Israeli drone footage of Syed Hariri's dad, Rafiq's murder. It was done with German technology. You can see the white collar next to his melted watch. Now, how could that be possible? You see the big old crater? Well, nano-uranium, nano-U. So high-density objects like the gold watch will absorb the heat and were melted. And the low-density object like the delicate fabric of Hariri's shirt collar didn't have enough time to absorb the heat and were unaffected. Quote, this weapon is equipped with a nano-quantity of enriched uranium. One of the passengers in Rafiq Hariri's armored car survived the explosion. Former Minister Basil Flehan, F-L-E-Y-H-A-N, was taken to top-notch French military hospital. He had been in contact with enriched uranium. That's from VoltaireNet, article 16753. I also had a comment. What does the security of a free state mean but U.S. ability to carry forward slavery? Of course, you need 6 shooters to create this house of bondage. But as a vegetarian, I know people are animals too. And as the son of a 5-year-old drop-kicked onto the Getty plantation to kill bunnies before saying not to bring him back here if he died when I took my dad to a basic life support class where I was teaching, I hate any such free state. Okay, that's my comment on the the right-wing, gun-clutching, immigrant-bashing little dicks out there. You know who you are.
These mist-covered mountains are home now for me, but my home is the lowlands, and always will be. Someday you'll return to your valleys and your farms, and you'll no longer burn to be brothers in arms. Through these fields of destruction, baptisms of fire, I've witnessed your suffering as the battle reached higher, and in the fear and the alarm, you did not desert me, my brothers and I.
Was trying to flee the country. So if that's not a purge, I don't know what we can call it. It's not a family feud, obviously, because you don't kill your members of the same family. But again, it's the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. It's Saudi Najdis. We don't know what they are thinking. We don't know how they are going to work it out.
You're listening to The Corbett Report.
Welcome to the Mouse Report. This issue is oil sod shitter war. Because you, whether you know it or not, gringo, gringa, are paying for Al-Qaeda, which means shitter in Arabic, in Yemen and Syria. That's what you've been doing for half a dozen years under the Arab sting, the October 2010 Southern Mistral NATO operation. But here's some of the background on the oil sod shitter mongers.
Welcome, friends. James Corbett here at CorbettReport.com. Today is the 8th of November, 2017, and today we're honored to be joined on the line from Beirut, Lebanon, by a commentator who hasn't been on the Corbett Report before, but I hope some of you will be familiar with her work. She's a journalist, political commentator, analyst, whose work has been featured on many different outlets, including RT and Press TV and many others besides. We're talking to Marwa Osman, who is on Twitter at Osman_Marwa1, and I even can't say that properly, so I will put the link in the show notes so that you can go there directly and follow her there on Twitter and get links to all of her interviews and writings. Marwa Osman, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
All right, we are talking on the 8th of November, obviously in the midst of these crazy tectonic events that are taking place in the Gulf, including, of course, the recent shock resignation ? Of Prime Minister Hariri of Lebanon in Saudi Arabia on Saudi TV. What on earth is going on? Just some crazy events happening right now, and obviously we're right in the midst of it. So, well, there's breaking news happening every minute as we're speaking here. So let's try to make sense of what's happening. Can you give us the latest on what's going on and what do we know and what don't we know right now?
Well, that would be my pleasure to do so, despite the fact that it's very much complicated. But I'd like to start from the end, actually. Today, this morning at 11 a.m., there was a tweet by Al Arabiya channel, which is the official channel of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which is it calls its allegiance to Mohammed bin Salman, who's now heading the purge in Saudi Arabia. They tweeted a photo of him and they wrote breaking news in a matter of hours, the announcement of Mohammed bin Salman becoming king. That's what I did. I was like, what? That fast? But then it was deleted a couple of minutes later. But obviously we all have screenshots by now. So that is like a wow. I mean, hold on. Dude. So yeah, basically, let's go back to what was going on and then talk extensively about the details of this situation. What happened is at the beginning of last week, our Prime Minister, Saad al-Hariri, went on a visit. It's a natural, ordinary, routine visit that he usually does to Saudi Arabia to talk about the regional affairs or to talk about certain issues that may or may not be required of him to do or not do in Lebanese politics, because we're not going to lie to ourselves. He is being, at the moment, coerced, but at that time he was being led by the Saudi, if you will, interests in Lebanon. So he went on that trip and he came back on Wednesday. And on Wednesday, he had multiple meetings with several regional diplomats, including Ali Akbar Wilayati, who is the senior advisor of Sayyid Ali Khamenei. And it was a very good meeting. And both of them were very positive after the meeting when they did each did their own statement. And also during that day, Saad al-Hariri signed the assignment of a new Lebanese ambassador to Syria. That was a shocker for me, I'll be very honest with you, because he was very vocal about not doing that, but he then ended up doing it. So just after that, and I'm not saying it's linked, I'm just saying what happened. After that, he was summoned directly back to Saudi Arabia. That is 24 hours after he returned to Lebanon. He was summoned with a degree of urgency. So he left Lebanon urgently, and he only was allowed to have a few number, which are counted on one hand, of bodyguards. That's how urgent that was. So he left Lebanon. I am pretty sure he had no idea what he was going or putting himself into, but he left on the matter of urgency. And on Saturday, approximately midday, we started hearing about breaking news saying that Saad al-Hariri, the Prime Minister of Lebanon, has resigned in a recorded video from Saudi Arabia on the channel, on the official channel of Al Saud, which is Al Arabiya channel. At first, we thought it was a joke, to be honest, because we were shocked. because there was no evidence that something was wrong with the government. There was no evidence, whether from him or from his rivals for that matter, that there was something going on, politically speaking, inside of Lebanon that would hint to a resignation. Not at all. And we will talk about that as well. But what happened after that is what's much more interesting. The resignation of Saad al-Hariri was at, I remember very well, because I was prepared to go out and my day was wrecked because I had to go to work, back to work. So it was a Saturday. It was about around 1 p.m. Beirut time. And we heard that. And just 2 hours later, breaking news about the arrest and the detention of 11 very important princes and more than 20 senior figures that were arrested by Mohammed bin Salman on the orders of Mohammed bin Salman. And later on, an hour later, it was broadcasted or it was announced that, of course, via Twitter. All of this is via Twitter because we cannot get anything from any media channel. So via Twitter, it was announced that the Ritz-Carlton is actually the new prison. And we knew that only because of the memo that was sent out by the Ritz-Carlton to the actual guests there, asking them politely to leave. So that there, well, there we go. So as, and the memo said that it was a matter of national security and an urgent matter by the government that we need you, we ask of you to leave. So we're talking about a 5 or maybe 7 class star hotel that is very, very luxurious, that that actually hosted the Donald Trump summit that happened, I think it was 2 months or so ago, but it was midsummer. And so it's that, and it's the same hotel. We'll talk about that too. It's the same hotel that Mohammed bin Salman had hosted the convention about the technology. We all heard about Sophia, the robot who was given the Saudi nationality. And we heard about the new city, the new intelligent city that bin Salman wants to build, which is NEOM. That it was hosted just days before in that hotel, in the Ritz-Carlton. And we started linking the manner that bin Salman was able to arrest all of these princes at once, meaning that they were in the country all together because of that convention. He did that convention to bring all the local and international and regional investors into the country to come watch what the new investments in Saudi Arabia for his 2030 plan is for this new NEOM city, smart city, which, by the way, Al-Walid bin Talal refused to invest in, which is also a big question mark. Why would he refuse? So that happened 2 days later. Everybody goes back to the Ritz-Carlton, but as detainees, which is shocking. Now, what's shocking is not only having someone like Al-Walid bin Talal, whose net worth is more than $18 billion, being detained under the cases of corruption. And here we're talking about corruption of princes who already have everything. Are you actually able to like, can you buy these men? These might buy you. You can't buy them. So that's also a question about corruption here. What kind of a corruption is he talking about? Is it political corruption or actual monetary corruption? That's another question. So what happened is the entire mainstream media focused a lot on this special prince, who's Al-Walid bin Talal, who has shares in major companies like Twitter and so forth. But there's also Mitheb bin Abdullah, who's the head of the national security apparatus in the kingdom. Now, if we go back to what happened at the beginning of summer 2017, when Mohammed bin Salman issued this coup against Mohammed bin Nayef, who was back then the crown prince, and he took his place, he also took control of the army and he took control of the police force inside of the kingdom, which means he became the leader and he became of both armies, and he also became the minister of defense and the minister of interior, and he's everything now. And he also became the crown prince. Now, if you go through what happened since the ousting of Mohammed bin Nayef, where all of these princes who are now detained were part of his party, they were loyal to Mohammed bin Nayef. So it was obvious that Mohammed bin Salman was just waiting for the right time, maybe, to get to them. And he did that investment convention about NEOM and the robot, etc., in the Ritz-Carlton. He got them all in Saudi Arabia. He detained them 2 days later. Now, after that, we started hearing about deaths, about fire, exchange of fire. We had Fahd bin Abdullah dying. When Fahd bin Abdullah, I'd like to remind everyone, because it's I'm saying a lot of names, and it might be a bit complicated for people who don't know about the royal family. I still sometimes confuse them. But the thing is, we know very much Fahd bin Abdullah because he is Saad al-Hariri's best friend since they were very young. They used to go to the pubs together. They used to go to everywhere around the world with the yacht and, you know, the luxurious lives of the prince. He was there with him. And every investment that Saad al-Hariri has made, Fahd bin Abdullah was part of that investment. So Fahd bin Abdullah was about to get detained, and there was an exchange of fire at the entrance of his gate at the palace where he got shot. He went to the hospital. 2 days later, he's dead. He's announced dead. There you go. And then later on, you have the helicopter that was downed at the border area between Saudi Arabia and Yemen, which had on it a prince and several other ministerial and senior figures in the area of Asir. And the area of Asir is the area bordering Yemen. It's on the southern part of Saudi Arabia. A downing of a plane. Exact next day, which was yesterday, Haaretz issues a huge report. Israeli Haaretz newspaper issues a huge report and says it was Saudi war jets that downed that helicopter because that prince was trying to flee the country. So if that's not a purge, I don't know what we can call it. It's not a family feud, obviously, because you don't kill your members of the same family. But again, it's the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. It's Saudi Najdis. We don't know what they are thinking. We don't know how they are going to work it out. And by the way, Mohammed bin Salman himself, he was at a certain point kicked out of the country because at a very early stage of his life, he came to Saudi Arabia after getting his degree somewhere. I don't know where exactly he got his degree from, but he came to Saudi Arabia and he paid a huge amount of money to buy weapons, and he decided that he wants to liberate Bilad Fars, which is Persia. But his dad was crazy, and the king at that time, King Abdullah, was like, "Are you mad, boy? Get out of the country." He kicked him out.
So this morning, listening to Big Brother, I was again nauseatingly not surprised by the war on Iran, because that's the last country on the list of the post 9/11 hit list. And of course, I played the little 9/11 clip, proving that no Afghan did it, no Iraqi did it, no Libyan, Syrian, Iranian, of course. The only possible suspects were behind it, and we met the enemy, and it is us.
And now, after Abdullah died, he came back.
Marwa Osman.
He started, just like dominoes, breaking them all, falling apart. He took the main chair. He's preparing himself to take the throne. And from today's tweet, from Al Arabiya, it shows clearly that he's very eager to get to that throne and as fast as possible. And he wants to make all the changes, whether in social life, in economic life, in military life. I don't know what kind of life also he wants to get his nose into, but he wants to make changes and really fast. And those changes, if he doesn't have the necessary skills and experience, he must have some consultants of some sort. What are they telling him?
They are saying it's an oil sod shitter war, because, of course, the sod, you know, as in lawn sod or turf, in other words, astroturf, but it's oil turf, it's oil sod, and Al-Qaeda is Arabic for shitter, for toilet. So, ¿qué quiere decir? Caga boca, pero oil sod, shitter war.
What are they consulting him? But if Kushner is his consultant and Donald Trump is his consultant, then he...
Then he's hooked in to blackmail any of the law that could be locking us up for the rest of our lives for conspiracy to murder internationally protected persons, 1116, 1117. So that's what the oil... sod shitter war is all about. We are waging war on our allies in the guise of the war on terror. So the Democratic and Republican terror war conspirators are covertly arming the people that they overtly kill with Well, now it's very confusing because it's the CIA that are using the drones to kill the Pentagon's allies in Yemen, the Pentagon backing Saudi Arabia. At the same time that, you know, we were behind it. Never mind.
He is doomed to failure because these people don't know how to manage their own political life. How about Saudi Arabia, which they know nothing about, especially the tribal system of Saudi Arabia? What the Western world has not seen is the hashtags that have been trending on the Saudi Arabian social media, which is a hashtag not in formal Arabic, but in spoken Saudi Arabic, which means you have to be familiar with their own hashtags to follow it and see the videos of the wreckage in the streets, of the fires, of a certain protests by people who don't show their faces because these people are loyal to the princes who are detained.
And so when they, the guy who the, you know, like along with Bandar, the Takfiria Death Squad murder boss gets kicked out, the people getting kicked out are now getting rounded up so they can put back the contra mongers, the slave mongers that are intrinsic to the history of this house of bondage, founded after the year after UK court banned the slave trade, having a treaty on the shores of Tripoli with slave mongers in the old world.
And now Mohammed bin Salman has his hand on the national security apparatus. He has his hand on the army, has his hand on every security and intelligence apparatus in the country.
And in the middle of that thought, I'm going to jump to Abby Martin on the Jimmy Dore Show, November 14th. Untold History, U.S. Empire.
Does, and she actually informs people. She informs me. She's the host of Empire Fires on the Telser English Network. You could see it on YouTube. She's right here. It's Abby Martin, ladies and gentlemen. Hi, Abby. How
hey,
are you?
Hey, great to be here.
Now, everybody, I'm sure, who watches this show is familiar with your work. It's amazing. So I watch what she does, and she actually informs people. She informs me. Story that is factless. You talk about pushing conspiracies. That's what this is, right? This is a big conspiracy.
It's a huge conspiracy, but I saw it back because I worked at RT 3 years prior to all these conspiracies were formulating. So I kind of saw it. I mean, we saw it with Al Jazeera. They were calling it the terrorist network. Remember Bin Laden's mouthpiece? It was totally basically marginalized as an alternative news source. This was after 9/11, of course. But then I saw the same thing happening as Russia became more, more of a fear-mongering tactic from the establishment and started presenting RT as an actual alternative news source that was criticizing Empire, criticizing U.S. corporations, hosting people like me on there. They didn't like that at all, Jimmy. So I saw it back then cultivating. I saw the hysteria. I saw when I was there and spoke out about the network's coverage of the Crimea intervention.
In which he was totally wrong, but you get to be totally wrong on some things. Never mind.
I saw a House of Cards style, like, psyop happen against me in D.C. from Bill Kristol's think tank. They had someone named Liz Wall come out right after me, come out and quit live on air. And then she got kind of carted around with Bill Kristol's henchmen to say RT was a Putin propaganda network. And I quit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa. So I saw kind of a lot of people behind the scenes that were those deep state actors already had RT in the crosshairs. That was for sure. So
in case any of you missed it, she was around there for like a year after saying that Russia was wrong to except the vote of the Crimeans, because that's where they sailed in the civil war here to kick our southern, to help us kick slave mongery to the curb. And they couldn't have done it without Russians in Crimea. They had 60,000 there by treaty with Ukraine, And the treaty allowed 25,000, which they did not succeed, and 90% of the people wanted to go home to Russia, and they did. So you were wrong, Abby. Just got to say that. DJ Mouse out.
After leaving and then seeing all of this come to a head where they have no one to blame but themselves for Trump, and they have to have an enemy, right? But we were all waiting with bated breath. What's the proof?
Well, now, when anybody says that anybody has to themselves to blame for Trump, Trump is a function of the deep state, and to give agency to either voters or Trump himself is to ignore the obvious fact of the black, of the fracked three-fifths black box vote scam that this House of Bondage perpetrates in the name of democracy, where,
What's the proof? So, of course, when the DNI report came out, we were all waiting. What's it going to be? Well, unfortunately, for the people who haven't read it, you might want to, especially if you believe in this concocted narrative, because half of the report, first of all, it was a four-year-old report. Some fucking intern could have done a better job in 2 hours just watching RT and updating that. So that shows you how little they really care about putting these propaganda narratives together. But half the report was talking about RT's coverage, my show. They said that I was fomenting radical discontent, that simply my coverage and RT's coverage of third parties, Black Lives Matter, Occupy Wall Street, greed, that is what fomented the discontent. That is what cultivated the support for Trump. Interesting. So basically, in a country where half the people are poor, talking about real issues, talking about how half the country doesn't have more than $1,000 in savings, that's Russian propaganda. That's what cost the election, apparently, to these people. So it pisses me off to no end talking about real issues, Jimmy. I didn't say one thing praising Putin. There's so many radical, like, socialists and leftists at the network who do it because they know that there's nowhere else that they can talk about these issues.
There is no place else that, I mean, look, we try to do it here. They're suppressing these videos. Unfortunately, even the left is pushing. It's coming from the left this time, this McCarthyism, this Russia. It's crazy. I used to talk, of course, Bill Crystal. Well, it's weird. Now the party, you know, when Hillary Clinton was running in the general, all these people like Bill Crystal, all these, well, I'm going to support Hillary. And David Frum. And now, so now the Democratic Party has officially become the party of, or how about Josh Barrow? When he announced that he was leaving the Republican Party, it's like, this is what finally did it, Trump, the Iraq War. So now the Democratic Party is officially the party of people who voted for George W. Bush twice.
Yeah.
What do you think about people like Keith Olbermann, who just apologized to George W. Bush.
I can't even fucking believe it. Keith Olbermann was one of my heroes during the Bush administration. I lived for his rants. He was even going out there and saying stuff about the anthrax attacks. I mean, he was hardcore. I don't know what the hell is going on with this lionization of Bush. Bush killed 1 million people. He tortured people. He created a gulag. That's still in effect. He deserves to be rotting in prison for the rest of his life.
Oh, you are so kind. That's not what I would have said, but...
It's just complete nonsense and doesn't help this at all.
Okay, Alex, well, how do you respond to that? Because we know a murder was committed. We do know that this gentleman worked at the DNC. We do know that Assange over at WikiLeaks commented on this. A 27-year-old was murdered in Washington. Why would he do that? Or, to be fair to everybody and our viewers, maybe he was covering up his tracks for the real source. I don't know. Go ahead, Alex.
Look, I think Assange definitely added some weight to this investigation by noting that there was a 27-year-old DNC staffer that was the source of the leaks. When Assange did that back in August, it drew the attention of a lot of people as to this whole investigation for the Seth Rich murder.
Times. The DNC refused each and every request. I have a petition that's over 6,000 signatures to get the DNC to give its computer service to the FBI. So you want to talk about a conspiracy theory? Why did the DNC not give its computer service to the FBI if they claimed that Russia hacked the DNC?
Do you have a copy of the subpoena served on the
James
Democratic
Comey?
National
are you calling James Comey a liar? Are you calling James Comey a liar? James Comey stated
do you
that
have
he asked
a copy of the search
FBI
warrant?
Asked for the D the F. Are you calling James Comey a liar? I don't think so. James Comey stated that the FBI asked for the DNC's computer servers. That's a fact. The DNC refused each and every
request.
They
asked for them for what?
So don't talk. Yeah, it's a fact. That's not. That's a fact. That was in the Hill.
It's a fact.
That was in
the Hill.
Okay,
hang on. Hey,
what does that have to do?
Gentlemen, hang on here. If everybody talks over each other, no one can hear what you're saying. Let me go to Alex here. You want to jump in there?
Just real quickly, it is a fact. James Comey asked for that information. He wasn't given access. And a private security firm called CrowdStrike passed on the information to the FBI, and they had to analyze everything from a third party.
Who hired CrowdStrike?
CrowdStrike?
1 minute. 1 minute, please. CrowdStrike actually had to back off from a lot of the claims that they made in the beginning as well. So they've even walked back the claims of the hacking and how it was hacked. So this is also something that has been unreported. But you have the FBI basing an entire leak on third-party investigation. It's not enough. It's not enough.
I don't know. I haven't seen the FBI. Have you seen copies of the FBI conclusions of its investigations? I haven't. You haven't.
No one has, but the point is that why was the FBI not allowed to investigate the DNC
service? All right, gentlemen, I have a hard break here. We're going to go to a short break.
I don't know if that's a fact.
And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Seth Rich. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaVelle. To remind you, we're discussing Seth Rich. Okay, AJ, I think it's really quite obvious why the mainstream media doesn't want to touch this story. And it's clear that they don't want their current narrative that they spend endless amounts of time, print, money, is the Russiagate story. They're still milking that. I think it's losing a little bit of its steam. They're going to move to obstruction of justice now. That's going to be their new mantra here. But they've built up this narrative here. And as far as I'm concerned, and I think it's fair to say I've been watching it as probably as closely as anyone on the planet here, I still don't see any evidence whatsoever here. And the murder of Mr. Rich it takes air out of that, and it deflects from the narrative that they've been pushing day in and day out for almost 11 months now. Go ahead.
Kim.com is willing to testify. He's willing to testify to provide evidence regarding Seth Rich being a WikiLeaks source. He worked with Seth Rich. He's willing to go ahead. He spoke to his legal team. He's willing to go ahead and provide evidence. If this was about Russia and Kim.com was saying he was going to provide evidence directly linking Trump to Russian hackers, the Washington Post, Dave Weigel, Oliver Darcy at CNN would make this into the biggest, most important story on the planet.
That is certainly a positive happening, you know, that's happened so far this year in Egypt. The problem is that in this country, you know, we started declaring most of the people enemy, you know, and they couldn't vote.
Right.
And actually most of the people are women and they couldn't vote. You couldn't vote if you were property, you know, only the rich white man could vote. The smallest percentage on the continent is what we call majority rule here. And so we maintain this illusion that we call democracy, but in the Arab world, Libya and Iran are recognized as sovereign. You know, they're free. They have freed themselves from the colonial hand that Egypt and Tunisia were wresting themselves away from. So, we're conflating opposite political movements here.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, but you're saying that no, they aren't having their revolutions to get a democracy and complete my sentence for me. They are having their revolution to do what?
Well, who are we talking about, Libya?
Let's talk about Libya. Aren't they trying to get rid of a dictator and perhaps put in a different system?
The people that were cut out are, and we're backing them. We always support the underdog until we pull the rug out. You know, it's divide and conquer.
Right. I do appreciate your call.
Stood still on the highway.
In a moment.
I saw.
By
the side of the road.
Fascinating time.
With a face that I knew like my own.
reflected in my window. Well, she walked up to my quarter light and she bent down real slow. A fearful pressure paralyzed me in my shadows. She said, son, what are you doing here? My fear for you has turned me in my grave. I said, Mama, I come to the valley of the rich, myself to sell. She said, son, this is